has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Oh, Jeremy, you know, it's been a while since we actually talked about the news, but just before we sat down tonight to record this episode, I happened to check my Twitter feed, and some kind of exciting news out there about an upcoming series that have got some characters that we are familiar with.
It's pretty interesting. What do you think of that?
Well, so for those of you that haven't been maybe checking Twitter lately, of course I'm talking about the recent announcement that Dave Franco is going to be portraying Vanilla Ice in the upcoming biopic. Couldn't be more excited than any other person with the high fade hair from the streets of Miami, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's perfect casting. Yeah. And I can't wait when he gets hung outside of the balcony, you know.
Yes.
With, you know, yeah. Who was it, like Suge Knight that did that?
Yeah, so, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, just to see Franco hanging upside down outside of a balcony, and yeah, that's just exciting
that's
to me.
That's what we live for. Unmistakably totally. Vanilla Ice, the podcast. So, okay, all right. So, yes, that broke this evening, but there is some news. I don't know at the time of recording. I don't know that it's been actually confirmed by Lucasfilm, but it seems like we might get some future Disney Plus series starring a certain gambler with an affinity for capes.
Yeah, and I haven't really heard too much about that until you just said that. So, are we talking Lando?
Is that who we're talking? We're talking a series with Lando with Donald Glover on Disney Plus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been talked about by a lot of the major trades, but again, it hasn't been confirmed by Lucasfilm or Disney. So who knows? But something potentially kind of cool. I was actually just reading an article, I want to say in Variety, maybe a week or so ago, with Alden Ehrenreich, and he had said he didn't know if he'd, what it would take for him to come back to the character of Han Solo. So don't know if he'll be part of this or not, but my goodness.
That's a surprise. I would figure they would go with, you know, Alden Ehrenreich and go back to Solo.
Yeah.
So this is a fun curveball, because you know Solo could maybe make an appearance. You have to think about the canon here,
right?
Of course,
right.
And you know, do they cross paths again? Because we know that conversation in Empire Strikes Back seems like it's been a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm real curious how that will play out. And, you know, we're also hearing, obviously, the Bad Batch series, you know, connecting to the Clone Wars characters and seeing what happens to them. That's interesting. And, you know, there's been rumors of my goodness, Hayden Christensen maybe making an appearance in the Obi-Wan series.
Right.
And so there's a lot floating around. And you know what I'm wondering, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think at this point, because of what we're dealing with in the world, with COVID-19 and just the movie theaters, you can't even say struggling anymore. You could almost use the word they're dying. Mm. You know, you wonder if Disney is shifting their strategy to say, hey, if we're going to keep these properties alive, these IPs, we need to use Disney Plus to do that.
Right.
And I wonder if, you know, as horrible as what we're dealing with, I wonder if that's going to cause more projects being introduced on Disney Plus than what would have happened if we weren't going through COVID. What do you think of that? Do you think that's potentially what's going to happen?
Well, it seems like that has got a good potential for so many reasons. In addition to ones that you've talked about, I think the other things to kind of play into this, it wasn't that long ago in our pre-COVID world where a lot of movie houses were pushing back against Disney because Disney was wanting to take a larger and larger cut of ticket sales. And so I think that this is going to allow for several things. That, yes, certainly kind of the quote-unquote safety of our own home. It's going to allow Disney to have perhaps a bigger piece of the pie. But most importantly, for me as a personal perspective, is we're going to get these series, which, you know, I'm on record unequivocally stating that this is what I love. Take me to the Star Wars universe where we've got a series and I can come and get to know these characters over the course of several episodes. So for me, this is great. I'd love to know from you, though, if indeed that this is true, and if indeed we have this Lando series, and of course we would want Han to kind of come in and out as necessary, maybe even get a little bit of that backstory or with Kira and Maul and stuff. What other else would you like to see kind of within that world, within that series?
Just, yeah, you know, and some I was thinking when I was thinking about Solo is I was saying, well, why couldn't they go back and take those Brian Daley books from back in the day? Han Solo at Star's End is probably one of the more famous ones.
Yeah.
And just make that a season.
Yeah.
You know, why? And so when I was thinking about Solo, I was saying, why can't they do that? Well, there was a similar thing done with Lando, the Lando Calrissian adventure. So it was like Lando Calrissian and I think it was called the Mind Sharp of Sharu was one.
Yeah.
And the Flame Wind of Ocean was one. I mean, they're just crazy titles.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Star Wars hasn't done is really, really tapped in to some of these stories that exist. I mean, you could kind of make a case that Ben Solo, Kylo Ren was sort of this kind of cobbling together some of the children of, you know, Luke Skywalker, right, or Leia and Han. But other than that, there hasn't been a lot pulled out from the old EU.
Right.
And I'm like, take a shot, man. Mm. Grab some of the great things and make that. So that's where I would say I would love to see the Lando Calrissian adventures and those story elements brought in to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I lean. Is there a place that you go to or things you want to see for him?
Listen, give me Donald Glover and a series and I'm good, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, totally.
But I would love to see, and I don't know if it's a springboard to an additional series. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just maybe something that's woven into kind of a parallel timeline within a Lando series. But I really, really, really want to see some more Infus Nest. Give me some Infus Nest.
Yeah. And I'm hoping she's going to show up in this Cassian Andor series,
right,
you know, the same timeline. They're rubbing shoulders. It would be really fun, though, if we would see her not only in a Lando series, but in that Cassian series as well.
Oh,
I mean, that would be neat to see this kind of character crossing over during that time period. It'd be a lot of fun. I would love to see Lando and how he slowly takes control, or quickly takes control, we don't know, of Cloud City.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, how does he get to Bespin? There was that great comic series. It was a mini series that was written that kind of talked about Lando's, it kind of dealt with Lando's relationship with Lobot,
right,
which, you know, is such a throwaway character for so many people, but he really became compelling in this comic series. And to this date, that comic series might be my favorite in the Marvel Comics line, this reboot when Disney took control. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely top three of my personal faves as well. And, you know, there was also a recent interview article with Billy Dee Williams and was asked if Lando's tales are over. And he gave a great non-answer, but he indicated that it might not be over. So we don't know if he not only was talking about this potential Donald Glover series on Disney Plus, or in fact, maybe even he plays some part of a series where he as the actor is involved. So who knows? He got all kinds of options. Well, listen, dear listeners, we are glad you are with us on this episode of Unmistakably Star Wars. We are smack dab in the middle of Joseph Campbell's work, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And so, listen, talking about Lando Calrissian, the hero with 1,000 capes, let's go ahead and jump into our closer look and take a closer look at the work of Joseph Campbell.
Hi, this is Eric Walker.
This is Jason Fry.
Hi, this is Delilah S. Dawson.
And you are listening to Unmistakably.
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 Unmistakably Star Wars, the podcast.
This bickering is pointless. Why are you asking this of me?
I am here because you are here.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
What did you say?
Same thing I always do, talk my way out of it.
I grow tired of asking this, so it'll be the last time.
How simple you make it. Life in dark, as if there is one without the other.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
All right, we are continuing our exploration of Joseph Campbell's seminal work, The Hero with 1,000 Faces. And if memory serves correct, we're somewhere right around part two, chapter one. Jeremy, I got to be honest with you. When we kind of made the blueprint for this series, I claim complete ignorance in thinking that Joseph Campbell's written work was going to be anything less than completely in-depth and stewing in large $50 SAT words that made me kind of stay up at night thinking about how those connect to Star Wars.
Yeah, and tonight's stuff that we're going to be talking about is wonderfully complex.
Yes.
And it ain't easy, man.
It's not. And so one of the things that, like, it's the disclaimer that we've been putting on this entire series. Yeah. This is going to be a deep dive from our perspective. This is not a deep dive if you were going to go study Campbell at a university. This is the poor man's version of studying Joseph Campbell. Yeah. And hopefully it's not only insightful, but a little bit entertaining for you as well. So this week, again, we're pushing off from the dock. We're getting into part two, chapter one. And one of the macro themes that he introduces us to in this part of the book is this concept and this term cosmogonical. I mean, cosmogonical. Listen, I love that. If I were musically inclined, I might even name a band cosmogonical because it's out there. So listen, it kind of goes like this. As he would put it, remember, go with me, dear listener, go with me back to your first viewing of Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And there's a young Luke Skywalker who, from all the memes that are out there now, we think might actually turn his lightsaber on as he's looking down the shaft. And he's sitting there in Obi-Wan's abode in the middle of the Dune Sea out there. And Obi-Wan answers the young Luke Skywalker about what the Force is. And he says something like this: the Force is what gives a Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things that surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. And this is really what Campbell is getting at. It's this interplay between the physical and the metaphysical, the tangible and the intangible, and how those two things are always working in concert with one another. So, Jeremy, let's just, as we begin our conversation tonight, let's just kind of unpack this a little bit. When we think of Star Wars, this space opera that's been around for 40-some-odd years at this point, and we start actually peeling back layers and get into these things like cosmogonical. It's not just a popcorn fare movie we come to understand. And so, as we start tonight's conversation, from your perspective, when you see this cosmogonical theme that Lucas weaves into Star Wars, and really, I know you're on record as saying, like, one of your favorite elements of Star Wars, and so how, for you as a Star Wars fan, did that really shape your love for the franchise?
Yeah, when it relates to cosmogonical or the cosmogonic cycle,
yes.
You know, it's really interesting when you start to think through this stuff, and you know, you can overlay it not just with Star Wars. I mean, you can look at, you know, there's elements where the Christian faith, you can overlay this, overlay the cosmogonical cycle over the Christian faith, over like Aztec thinking, over, the Indian subcontinent. Like there's so many places in our world that intersects with this. And it's so much fun with Star Wars because it I'm not going to say it's simple, but it might be a little more accessible because of the medium of film, where you can actually see it play out. But one of the things that really jumps out at me, and it's something we talked about way, way back, early days of the pod, is this idea of the cycle, the cosmogonic cycle, beginning and end. And it's it is the physical, it is the spiritual, but it's this idea of, and I think even Campbell talks about how that you're awake. It's a sleep cycle. You know, you're awake, you go to sleep, you wake up again, and it repeats. And you could even go into what's fascinating is one type of cosmogonical cycle or cosmogonic cycle is where you have, you know, everything's good, everything becomes bad, everything becomes good again, just to be as simplistic as possible. And in Star Wars, I mean, don't we see that over and over again? And one of the first things I thought about, and it might anger some fans, I don't know, because I might be way off. But I really thought of the ring theory and how there is this kind of cycle, the cyclical nature to Star Wars that we've been talking about for a long time. And, you know, there's that famous video everybody watches where the Star Wars is poetry video. But there truly is this kind of like circular movement to Star Wars that connects. It connects to Campbell's idea of the cosmogonic cycle where you have not only spiritual, like good, challenging darkness and good again, but also all the physical aspects of that as well. And so when I was looking at this and thinking about Star Wars, I'm like, oh, wow, it's all over the place. And look at Lucas with this kind of this ring theory, or as he would say, it's poetry. It just it rhymes, you know, it repeats itself. And I really, that really jumped out at me. I could be way off, but that was one of the first things I thought of when we, when I started doing the reading for tonight's episode.
Well, I love that. And I think that that plays so nicely. You know, you brought up like Christian literature and scripture. And I think that that, that is one, and you, we can certainly look at other historical texts that would do this as well. But, you know, one of the things that is true, especially if we look at the Torah, the Old Testament, the Pentateuch especially, we would see these poems that would have this approach where line one would have like the same reference as the last line, and then line two would kind of have the same reference or theme as the second to last line, and then you're finally kind of making your way to the middle, which is the heart of the writer, the author's message that he wants the reader to walk away with. And I think that Star Wars, you brought up the ring theory, does that in very much the same way, where it, we're all pointing in this one direction. And I think that, yeah, you use sleep cycle as well as an example. And to talk about, I'm going to pull from another Disney property here, but it's the circle of life, right? It's that thing that, like, whether it is a sleep cycle, whether it is sleep on a more metaphysical, meaning death approach of things, but it is that cycle that is always in motion. And again, it's the physical and the non-physical, the metaphysical that are in concert and in harmony with one another. You know, one of the things that, if we look at some other examples within the Star Wars galaxy, there's this little bit of insight we get from the Clone Wars, I believe it was. And one of the things that Qui-Gon actually brings up, he talks about, he tells Yoda how he can exist after being killed in the Phantom Menace, right? So there's there's this nail-biting moment where all of a sudden the dude that we thought was gone toward the end of Phantom Menace is all of a sudden telling us how he's not really gone. No one's ever really gone, right? And he says something to this effect, Qui-Gon Jinn, is a manifestation of the Force, a force that consists of two parts. Living beings generate the living force, which in turn, the wellspring that is the cosmic force. And he goes on to say, all energy from the living force, from all things that have ever lived, feeds into the greater, the cosmic force. And then going back to mirroring what Obi-Wan said, binding everything together. I'm curious, Jeremy, from your perspective, when we look at this, to what extent do you think that this is so essential to Star Wars that without this element, without this thematic piece, Star Wars wouldn't be Star Wars?
Yeah, and I think it is essential, and I think it's at the heart of a lot of things. And in fact, reading some commentaries on Campbell, some of these commentators would say, you know, a lot of people don't talk too much about this, you know, this cosmogonic cycle.
Yeah.
But it's there, it's present, it's in everything, you know, it's right. sort of like the force.
Right.
And I came across a quote on one of the articles I was reading about this. And what was interesting about what the writer was saying was that what's good about this is it's not just the hero anymore, but it is a collective. Everybody is on this journey, this story. And so when we think about, like, for example, you know, the Rise of Skywalker, Finn was on a journey.
Yeah.
You know, Rey was on a journey. Poe was on a journey. You know, Ben Solo was on a journey. And I guess what I'm trying to say is it's inclusive.
Mm.
And one of the things that makes Star Wars so special is that, yes, it has this spiritual element, this physical element. Everyone is bound together through the Force. They're on this journey. There's a cycle to the journey. Things are good, bad, good again, and it just keeps repeating this ring theory concept.
Right.
And I love these ideas, and I love that it kind of everyone is valuable in this way of telling a story. And I just find it, if you take that idea out of it, then you have a story like Rambo, where it's just one dude gunning everybody down. I have nothing against a singular hero's journey at all. But there is something special when you deal with stories like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or Harry Potter, where you have multiple characters on this journey together in this cycle. It's really, really special. And so that's one of the things that really jumps out about Campbell's work and specifically the cosmogonic cycle.
I really like how you unpack that and broke it down. And I agree with that. And I think that that's one of the things, not just this cosmic force thing, right? But it is in so many ways making the argument for the journey of the every man or the every woman, the every person, the every being, however you choose to label that. And I think that within the last 5 years, Star Wars has continued to do better and better at actually recognizing in a much broader sense that it's not just the Luke, Han, and Leia journey, right?
Yeah,
but all of a sudden we're pulling in these diverse characters like Rose, or we're pulling in like Kylo and Rey, and we're pulling in Jyn Erso, and of course we mentioned Impa's Nest earlier, and Jaina from the sequel trilogy. And I think that you know, that is another great way of really, without saying this is the cosmogonic cycle, like, but showing what that actually looks like, or bringing all these personalities, all these different characters together, each on their own journey within a larger journey.
Yeah, and when you pull back, I mean, it is not just individual people and characters. It is the world or the galaxy or however you want to, you know, Middle Earth or whatever you're talking about. And it's the whole ecosystem is having this, you know, good to bad to good again, you know, and it repeats over and over again. And, you know, and all of these characters are caught up in it, in the sphere of movement. And it's fascinating stuff. I love how it's inclusive, but I also love how it really does. And it's the brilliance of Campbell. It really connects to so many faiths and myths and legends and stories that we've been telling for years and years and years. And it's something almost like embedded in us. Like we kind of, we get it without maybe knowing all the right words to say.
And I think that that's one of the things, right? Because we've talked about both on air and off air. Like, so how do you describe Star Wars to someone that never has seen Star Wars or been part of that fandom? And it's not just a modern samurai tale. It's not just a Western. It's not just kind of this buddy comedy from time to time. But I think that this, probably more than any other element, is really what makes Star Wars Star Wars, in my opinion. It's that thing that not only we are personally going through as humans, but it's also the thing that we look to see how others deal with within their own journey.
Yeah, and it's we're kind of in it together, right? Right,
exactly.
And it's sort of what Obi-Wan's talking about with Qui-Gon when they're before Boss Nass and the Phantom Menace, mm-hmm. like this symbiotic relationship,
right,
you know?
Right.
And, you know, if something happens to one, it happens to the other, we're all caught up in this ecosystem together as it flows from good to bad. The bad is going to happen to everybody, but the good can as well. Mm. And I love those ideas of you know, birth, death, rebirth, but not just for the individual,
right.
Which I guess it's hard for Americans especially to kind of think through. We're so extraordinarily individualistic. Mm. My rights, my freedoms,
right.
You know, my liberty. And I think, you know, just based on some of my experiences and my travels other than in the United States, there are cultures out there that don't quite think that way.
Mm.
And they think more collectively, yeah. Our community, our
right.
culture,
right.
and that ebb and flow to it. And I think it would benefit Star Wars fans, speaking as an American, just those fans in the United States, to kind of think through that as they're diving into Star Wars, like, oh, no, it's this collective. Mm. It's affecting everything. The galaxy is doing this. It's
right.
not just
right.
It's not just individuals.
Yeah.
And I think when you can start looking at it like that, it really opens Star Wars up to some neat things to kind of consider.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to the sequels, you know, in The Last Jedi, we've got Luke and Rey out on the ledge there after... they come together on Ahch-To, and Luke says, you know, the Force, it's this energy between all things, very much mm-hmm. mirroring what Obi-Wan is saying in A New Hope. It's
yeah.
this energy between all living things. It's a tension, a balance that binds the universe together. And then, you know, of course, Rey closes her eyes and she explains to Luke what she sees. And among the things that she mm-hmm. says, the islands, birds,
yeah.
death and decay, that feeds new life, warm, mm-hmm. cold, peace, violence. And again, I think like you've done such a great job tonight, Jeremy, just really demonstrating and giving an example of like, oh no, we are a part of this. This isn't geography based. It's not religion based per se. Like you can be an atheist and mm-hmm. still understand like the cycle that life happens and the interplay, and use symbiotic relationship as a label, and how everything is really woven together.
Yeah, and you know, and if you want to go super closer look,
yeah, yeah,
you know, think about culturally what's going on. I mean, we are in the midst of a death right now.
Yeah,
with you know, obviously real death, like someone like George Floyd, and you know, death as in what's happening with COVID. You know, you have this kind of, we're in death right now. What is it going to take to be reborn?
Mm.
And, you know, what's amazing about Star Wars is, if rebirth is to happen within that story, love has to be present.
Mm.
Luke's love for his father, his father's love for Luke, you know, Rey's love for Ben's love for Rey. You know, it's fascinating to think about. And it's, you know, way back we had Cass Sunstein on, and, you know, just talking about like the power of Star Wars, that it's not just some silly sci-fi fantasy,
right.
But there's more going on. I think it's tapping into something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a question just for me as I'm kind of like thinking through my own life and the culture I live in and the community I live in, is like, how can I bring about rebirth? Because we're in death right now in that phase, and just longing for that rebirth. And I, the only answer I can seem to find is love. Is that is the only way I can see my way through it.
Yeah.
And I'm worried that our communities won't see that that's the way through it. And so we're in this really precarious time, and I love Star Wars for that reason, that it can kind of open up things for us as fans and just kind of consider, you know, what's going on in our world today, but also the fun that we see in this imaginary, you know, galaxy.
Well, I love that for so many reasons. One, because I relate with it. It's hard to turn on a TV or check a news feed without just, I think it was the New York Times that coined this in an article that I had recently read. It's called doom scrolling, right? We're just scrolling. Yeah. It's like, please, something look good and life-giving and sustaining. But yeah, it's just doom scrolling.
It is, isn't it? Oh my gosh. I just, when I see a good story, I literally get excited. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm just going to read this.
Yes, exactly. You know,
they're so rare.
Yes, yes. The dog that walked 50 miles back to his previous home. Yes. Oh, yes. I love that. But you know, you brought up love, and I think that, you know, that's not only something that of course we need right now, and not just in the middle of pandemic, not just in the middle of protesting and rioting, but at all times, even under the best circumstances. And you know, it just as you were saying that, I flash back to that moment, of course, during The Last Jedi, where, you know, Finn is trucking. He is expecting to be kamikaze into the First Order's weapon on Krayt, and Rose cuts him off. And granted, I didn't like that story choice when I first saw it. But, you know, especially as we unpack this, like, her answer was literally, oh, no, we're going to beat them with love. And I think that there is not a better time that during my lifetime anyway, where that has been more prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Jeremy, from your perspective, you know, we talked a little bit at the top of the show about the potential of a Lando series and maybe who and what other characters may join that or what events might be part of that. But really, when we see this cosmogonic cycle and how all things are living in harmony, it's its own ecosystem in many ways. Yeah. And so for you, as we go forward, it doesn't matter whether streaming or theatrical release or whatever, but how do you want to see this continue to be explored throughout the Star Wars galaxy?
Yeah, you know, there's two things going on, right? Because we have all the, like, we talked about the Lando stuff. We've talked about maybe Solo going to happen. You know, Cassian, like, we have the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
You know, oh, please God, Obi-Wan, right? And so we have all these things going on, but they're sort of set in this timeline that we know.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing getting too crazy. Mandalorian's sort of pushing it a little bit, but we know what comes after that, right? We know sequel trilogy is after.
Right.
And so we have two things. We have the one thing of the things we know, and we know the ebb and flow, the cycle that is taking place around those stories and how these characters are caught up in that bigger cycle. And so I want to see all that play out, and I want to see these stories, you know, kind of be fulfilled within that larger narrative. But at some point, Disney is Lucasfilm, they're going to have to go beyond or go back, right? We know that there's the High Republic stuff on the horizon that's going to show us a cycle at a different time on the timeline. And, you know, personally, I would love to see something later, but I wouldn't mind going back. And I'm talking mainly about, like, the visual medium, not necessarily in books.
Right.
So, you know, my first thing is, like, I want to see new stories and a new cycle in this new, you know, cosmogonic cycle.
Yeah.
But I also, personally, the one story that I really want to, like, latch onto because of the unknown factor is The Mandalorian. Mm. I want to see where it goes. I want to see how that cycle plays out. I'm positive Filoni is aware of that cycle, as is, you know, Favreau. And so I think we're going to see it. And so it's going to be fun to watch The Mandalorian play out with this concept of Campbell's in mind.
Mm. I like that. As you were saying that, here's a question that came to mind. You know, we have very mixed feelings in fandom about how Luke died, or at least became one with the Force at the end of The Last Jedi. And of course, the same with Han Solo in The Force Awakens. We have Carrie Fisher and Leia dying at the end of The Rise of Skywalker. Other characters throughout the series have obviously met their demise as well. I'm curious, though, Jeremy, from your perspective, when you understand and you look at this and this cosmogonic cycle, does it make those deaths for you any easier, or do you at least have a better understanding of, like, this is actually part of the ring theory, and since, like, there is life, there is death.
Yeah, it's there's kind of two parts, right? Sometimes we watch things with our hearts, right? So when, you know, Kylo kills his father, that was a gut punch, mm-hmm. right? And we feel it deeply and we're like, you know, oh no, that's it. But we also had that beautiful scene in The Rise of Skywalker with Ben Solo and his dad, mm-hmm. and this redemption moment and life given to Ben, you know, and this rebirth. And then soon after, he dies. Mm-hmm. And so there's part of me that, like, in the moment, yeah, I feel these things. I'm wrecked at them. But at the same time, when you pull back a little bit and appreciate Star Wars, you have these moments where you're like, oh, I get it. It's part of the cycle. It's part of our way we tell stories. Mm. I understand, you know, and I actually, I really appreciate those moments. I get it if people are really upset, mad. Like, I totally understand
right,
that.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not like, you know, a huge fan of some things myself, right? But I do understand why those things have happened. Mm. The things I loved, you know, and the things I didn't like. And I'm able to kind of pull back, I guess, enough and sort of see the cycle and why that would make sense to a storyteller.
Mm.
And so that's kind of how I view it. I don't know. What about you?
No, I think very much along the same lines. I think certainly, like, there are story choices that might make me wince or be disappointed, maybe even a little bit on the frustrated side of things. But ultimately, I realize that the only thing I can control in that situation is my reaction, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that if we're looking at a literature standpoint, mm-hmm. I think we can look at this and go like, oh, well, not only does this make sense within the greater crux of the arcs within Star Wars, but of course, like, oh no, this is life. Who amongst us has not felt some level of pain? Who amongst us has not felt some level of joy? And I think that it's that great reminder that for me, and you and I are guilty of bringing this up probably too much on this podcast, but like our lens into the Star Wars galaxy has changed the older we have become as men. And the old man in the Dune Sea, the crazy old hermit that I saw as a youth is, oh, I identify with that guy now, right? Mm-hmm. It's very much.
Yeah.
And so I think as we look at this, I think it's something that I have not only a much more appreciation for how this unfolds within the Star Wars galaxy, but how great of a reminder it is that, oh, this is actually what happens in the real world. And so it's one of those things where you don't have to be fully divorced from the film. Talking about symbiotic relationships, such as life and what we see in this theme within Star Wars. Jeremy, I'm curious though, because, you know, when I had the opportunity a few years ago to go down to the premiere of the Rebels finale down in Burbank, mm-hmm. courtesy of great friend of the pod, Clayton Sandell, and had the great fortune of sitting next to good friend of the pod, John Marie Messias, and talk with Dave Filoni. You know, he said at that time that everything we need to know about the Force are in the films.
Mm.
And of course, we can expand that to include the animated series and stuff as well. But
sure,
from your perspective, as we get more and more stuff, whether it's in animated form or a live action series, comic book, whatever it is, to what degree do you think this thing, the cosmogonic cycle, the Force, this energy within the galaxy, to what extent do you think that we as fans of the franchise are better served when there's mystery to it, that it's not fully unpacked and explained to us?
I think it's key, you know, and we've even had episodes just talking about the mystery in Star Wars. And I think, you know, just as I was listening to you talk, like there's truly, I think Star Wars resonates with us because we see even in those films that are not like the perfect film, right?
Right.
We see there's little like hints of truth in it, and we love it for that.
Yeah.
Like, this is a campy, you know,
right,
space opera, but we at the same time there are moments where we're like, oh yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I've been afraid, although I haven't been, like, facing down the Dark Lord of the Sith. Yeah. But, like, I've had crippling fear before. Mm. And, you know, things resonate with us. When it comes to the Force, there is no, like, specific guidelines on what it is. Mm. Like, the Jedi have their code, the Sith have their code. But there is a great mystery. You know, with the Bindu, we see that mystery, right? Right. And where does he fall? You know, and he's like, neither. Mm. And so I think it's good. And the reason why I was connecting this to like the truth in life is I think there are so many mysterious things in our life. Mm. You know, why did, you know, I had two younger brothers that passed away when I was very little. Mm. Why did that happen? There's a mystery to that to me and the grief it caused my parents. And you know, but at the same time, their death brought about the adoption of my sister from Korea and life. And yet in that there is mystery, you know, see good and I see bad and I see death and life. And at the same time, I question like, you know, was God part of this? How is he part of this? Mm. You know, you deal with the problem of evil no matter where you're at. And there's mystery in that. And I think if Star Wars is able to give us like peeks behind the curtain, but not reveal everything.
Yeah.
It at times can really feel true because that's some of the things we're experiencing in our own lives. And I think that right there is kind of what I would love to see with the Force. I don't mind little peeks, you know,
right?
Like Luke and Rey talking in The Last Jedi. But at the same time, I don't need a list of what it is because I think it will take away some of the magic.
I'm fully with you on that. And I think that's one of the things that really brings conversations like this one necessary into light. And for me being part of this conversation, so insightful that what I enjoy are those little breadcrumbs, right? Just to enough to go, oh, you're helping me look at things differently. And I think that, you know, whether it's Star Wars or it's something that is non-Star Wars related, if such a thing exists, that can bring that new insight is something that I appreciate, right? And I think mm-hmm. that, you know, when we look at things in our own life, we would never, ever want to be so trite as to say, like, well, there must be a reason for it. Because I think then we have just like dehumanized whatever pain people are going through.
Exactly.
At the same time, we understand that it is part of the cycle.
Yeah.
And I think that whether someone listening to this believes in a higher power or not, I hope that at some level there is at least, when I say acceptance, I don't mean a full acceptance and embracing and a thumbs up. I mean, just kind of even on a very low level understanding of like, well, this is what life and death is. This is part of the natural order of things.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the beauty of Star Wars and some of these other stories that we adore, whether it's, you know, Lord of the Rings or, you know, Harry Potter. Those are some of the big, you know, IPs that we think of, but that's sort of the beauty in it is that there's this echo of what we experience in our own world.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you, man. Thanks for a great conversation.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was
we should
good.
Do this again. We
should do this again. My goodness. Well, hey friends, stick around. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this.
We're not done yet.
What did you say?
As long as everybody behaves, this will be quick and painless.
I want more.
I'm not going to lie to you, Jeremy. That song makes me groove a little bit. I'm going to bop the head back and forth there. Not that I have rhythm or anything. But
oh, no, we don't. We're pathetic.
Yeah. Well, listen, listeners, first off, thanks for hanging out with us. Listen, this COVID thing, regardless of your political view on this whole thing and with or without masks, Darth Vader with or without the mask, it's been tough sometimes to keep any regular rhythm, just from regular life. And then for us, even as a team, you know, it's been tough for us to have any sense of rhythm like we once had with this. So we're trying to get back on the horse and connect with you guys, our listeners, our fellow Star Wars fans, on a regular basis. So thanks for hanging out and really giving us some grace when it comes to consistency and stuff. And our hope is to continue to bring this to you on a regular schedule once again. As we get close to wrapping things up for this episode, we of course want to give an extra special shout out to our patrons who are so faithful with their financial generosity each and every month, talking about David Anderson, Dave Hackerson, Michelle Grandine, Neil Lowry, Kyle Russell, Aaron Sinner, Skip Skipton, and the always fabulous Michael Ward. Thank each and every one of you guys for not only being part of the USW family, but so generously reaching into your heart and being part of our patronage. We thank you so much for that. We will look forward to hanging out with you guys next time. That's going to do it for this episode. The circle is now complete. We'll see you next time in the digital docking bay, my little tauntauns. And until then, may the Force be with you.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at weareescapepods.com and on Twitter at @weareescapepods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.
This podcast is a production of Be Heard Studios. To learn more about Be Heard Studios and its shows, visit us online at beheardstudios.com. Be Heard Studios, creators of diverse listening experiences.